This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Hey everybody, we have two guests today, tonight, whenever. The regular old LB, everybody knows her.
Regular.
Say hi. Yeah, I mean irregular sometimes, but anyway, say hi.
Hey.
And we have with us Adriana Gober.
Hello.
Who is a fantastic musician and writer. Say hi. All right, that's the rest of the show. That's the end of it. That's it. No, I have this question because this is relevant to the topic. I'll ask LB first.
Yes.
LB, your first experience with an Ed Wood movie.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't think I really knew who Ed Wood was until the biopic. Is that correct? Biopic?
If you're British.
Biopic.
Biopic was made by Tim Burton. Before that, I'm not sure I really knew who he was too much. I mean, maybe I'd heard about him in passing, but when Ed Wood came out, that was like the time of my life where I was really starting to like learn about things. So like pop culture things. So I really, yeah, I think that's the first I had heard. And so then
94.
Yeah. And, you know, from that, you know, you learn the movies that he made, or, you know, at least the titles anyway. So.
Okay. Fair enough. Makes sense. Same question goes to you, Adriana.
Well, my first exposure to Ed Wood of any kind was the Tim Burton film about Ed Wood.
Same thing?
Yeah, basically same as LB, but the first Ed Wood movie that I saw was Glenn or Glenda, and that was unlike anything I'd ever seen. Like, I, you know, after the film concluded, I just kind of like, what the heck did I just see?
How old were you then?
I think about 15.
Okay.
Okay, that's actually, that's perfect. That's literally the correct age to be exposed to Ed Wood stuff. I think I was about the same age when I saw a movie called It Came from Hollywood, which was a bunch of SNL and SCTV actors who had bits, and also Cheech and Chong, they were on it too. They had these little skit segments, like Dan Aykroyd would ride up and on a motorcycle looking like a wild one, and then talk to the camera and introduce a segment.
16 October 2023. Colonel Dan Diamond, one of a handful of men to survive the hideous destruction of Earth by alien forms. His goal? To record the grim details of the invasion for future civilizations.
And the segments would be talking about clips or trailers for various B-movies. So It Came from Hollywood. Came out in 84, I think. And so I heard of Bride of the Monster. And then after that segment, we're talking about Tor Johnson walking into the wall and not taking another take for that scene, I was like, what is this nonsense? And then Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is just brilliant. It still is. It's just, there's a reason why it was called the best worst movie ever made or something like that.
Right.
Well, it was called the worst movie ever made, which I do not agree with.
I don't agree with that either. That's why I say the best worst. That's probably me saying that. But it was for a long time heralded as the worst. But
right. I think that's how I heard of it.
Yeah, the Medveds wrote in their the Golden Turkey Awards that it was the worst movie of all time.
But no, even back then, there it can't be. Like, Scum of the Earth is worse.
Oh, excuse me. Did you just speak ill of Herschel Gordon Lewis?
I mean, most of Herschel's movies are worse than.
I don't think so. I think there was a bit more a bit more craft in his films. I mean, I also find his movies very entertaining. I think Ed Wood's movies are a little more entertaining. But I will definitely go to bat any day of the week for H.G. Lewis.
So you think Lewis is better than Wood?
I didn't say that.
That's a question.
No. I think when it comes to technical skill, he is a better filmmaker than Ed Wood. But in terms of vision, in terms of passion, and in terms of just how fascinating the final product is, I think Ed Wood wins out.
Why all this talk of Ed Wood? What did we just watch?
Well, we just watched the 1998 film, I Woke Up Early the Day I Died.
From the legendary lost screenplay by one of Hollywood's most original filmmakers, Ed Wood. In an asylum for the criminally insane, a madman has escaped. But a change of clothes and a stolen car are just the start of a murderous spree. In a crazy world, he's the odd man out. It takes a brush with death to wake him up. Now, he's getting even with the people he thinks have taken his money and stolen his mind. Totally twisted, dangerously deranged. Billy Zane, Christina Ricci, Ron Perlman, Sandra Bernhardt, John Ritter, Carl Stroykin, Max Purda, Nicolette Sheridan, Tippi Hedren, and Will Patton. I woke up early the day I died.
Which was, for many years, an unproduced screenplay penned by Ed Wood that was unearthed and turned into this film.
So the film stars Billy Zane in a performance that I think is just amazing, honestly.
Yeah, Billy Zane is great in this movie.
Elby loves Billy Zane, and I think is also indifferent to him at the same time. I know.
What?
I'm not sure. What do you think?
What do you mean indifferent? Like, how do you think that I'm indifferent?
You don't watch his movies. I know that much. You don't watch his movies except for Demon Knight.
I watch his movies.
Not really.
Well,
you don't go, oh, it's a Billy Zane movie. I'll put it on.
Well, I would.
What's stopping you?
I don't know. Let me look. Okay, you know what? I'm going to look at Billy Zane's filmography right now and just, because I can't even, what? He's the Phantom. I've seen that. Come on.
You didn't like it. You didn't want to watch it when I put it on. And
I thought it was all right.
Just, you're making things up.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
Billy Zane's very handsome, I have to say that. He's a very smoldering individual, and I really appreciate how he has a wide acting range. And in this film that we watched, it is especially wide and awesome. I kind of think that Billy Zane can do anything.
I wish he did. I really appreciate Billy Zane, and it doesn't... Yeah, okay, yes it does. I'm going to bring it up. Okay. It comes from Twin Peaks, where I first was exposed to Billy Zane's work. Probably not exactly, because in 88 he did Dead Calm with Nicole Kidman, and I remember the trailer for that, but I never saw it because it was a rated R movie in 88. I wasn't allowed to watch rated R movies and stuff, and I didn't really sneak them too often. Like 2 years later is when I started sneaking it, so that one bypassed me. But I could tell, you know, Billy Zane, cool dude, also looked kind of sinister in Dead Calm, whatever.
Yeah.
But Twin Peaks Season 2, I guess if you're gonna replace Dale Cooper with anybody, I guess Billy Zane is adequate.
I'd say so. You know, maybe you're right. Maybe, I really have not seen a lot of Billy Zane movies.
I haven't either. I think the only thing I've seen Billy Zane in outside of I Woke Up Early the Day I Died is a cameo appearance in a Marilyn Manson music video.
Did you not see The Phantom?
No.
What?
It's okay.
You might like it. It's a pulp comic movie, so you might enjoy it.
Okay.
I watched Demon Knight whole lot when I was growing up. A whole lot. It was like this slumber party movie of me and my friends.
Adriana, have you seen Demon Knight?
I have not.
Tales from the Crypt movie?
No, I don't think I've seen that.
Wow.
And I liked Tales from the Crypt as a kid, so I don't know how I missed that one.
You should watch it.
Yeah. Oh, he's like so charismatic.
He really is.
That's the movie where he actually proves how charismatic he is. He's the devil,
okay. Basically.
I don't know if he's actually the devil, but he's this big bad guy like that. But he's just so charming and evil, but awesome and cool and funny and evil all at once. So yeah, Demon Knight, I would suggest. But here, he's doing pantomime the entire time.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing about this movie. There's no dialogue.
And, I mean, he occupies virtually every scene, and his character is the primary driving force of, you know, what little plot there is in this movie. So a lot is riding on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
He carries it with a hell of a lot of charisma.
Yeah. Now, you said plot, so you get it. What's the plot?
Okay. So the film follows a nameless criminal played by Billy Zane who escapes from a mental hospital by killing a nurse and donning her uniform. And then he goes on a rather prolific crime spree, including numerous robberies and murders, before ultimately meeting his demise. And I guess the central conflict of the movie is that he robs a bank or a loan office, or I'm not exactly sure. And he later comes across this funeral full of eccentric mourners who may or may not be part of some sort of cult. Mm-hmm. And in a series of mishaps, his loot goes missing. So most of the film involves this thief tracking these cultists down one by one and killing them until he finds his money.
Very good. Now, some more heavy lifting. The cast. I can't remember the cast because it's so sprawling with the actors. I can't.
Pretty much everyone who has ever acted appears in this movie.
every single person is a name actor.
I have this question, and it's another podcast's name. How did this get made? Because so many of the actors, you have TV actors, you have film actors, you have indie actors, you have sitcom actors. You have people who were just stand-up comedians. Dana Gould, who I watched the movie again just to find him, and I realized, oh, he's a carnival barker.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't spot him the first time because two things. I'm always watching Billy Zane, and then Karen Black's kind of curvy, voluptuous in this scene, and Elby pointed that out when we were watching it, so I was like, oh yeah, okay. No, she is. I don't know. I never think of Karen Black that way, but there she is with her butt waddling around. So Elby brought it up.
I did. It's true.
Yeah, and then you also have Bud Cort and Ron Perlman as the cemetery groundskeeper, and there's an Eartha Kitt performance.
Bud Cort is credited oddly. I don't remember what the screen said, but I think on IMDb it'll just say Bud Cort, but on the screen it had a different name.
Yeah, it was it was some weird, like, Count von Hammer blah, 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 blah. I don't know. It was some strange, like, very regal-sounding name.
And obviously fake, made up.
Yeah.
And Eartha Kitt, you said. But yeah, the Eartha Kitt scene's really interesting. Her song is pretty cool. I don't get the muscle dude with the super tight pants and the kielbasa. I'm not sure what that
He reminds
like.
Me of the two like beefcake guys in Orgy of the Dead who open Criswell's casket. Who they're kind of like his. I don't even know what to call
familiars?
Them. Familiars, yeah, I guess for lack of a better
beefcake
term. And
dude, familiars.
I think one of them later appears as like the werewolf or the mummy. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't either because that's Orgy of the Dead. Bunch of naked ladies dancing around.
Yes.
What monsters? So Sandra Bernhardt's in this. Will Patton, of all guys.
Anne Magnuson.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Christina Ricci. Tippi Hedren.
Vampira, of course. Myla Nurmi.
John Ritter.
I think Kathy Wood makes a cameo as well.
Huh.
Probably.
The Phoenix Sisters.
Yeah.
Summer Phoenix, and I don't remember the
Is
other
it
one.
Rain?
Is it Moon? Rain?
Moon.
I don't
why,
know.
Why aren't
Zappa.
The Zappas in this? They should be.
Right?
They should be.
They should be. I mean, it doesn't seem like it would be beyond them being in it, honestly.
Tara Reid.
Oh, right. Tara Reid.
Oh, yeah.
Tara Reid is so cute and Twiggy-like in this, and it makes me sad seeing her like that.
Yeah, she really, I pointed out her Twigginess.
Then and now sort of thing.
Then and
when
now.
You look at it then and now, it's really, really sad because she was adorable. And that was before she even got any of those, American Pie movies or whatever.
Yeah.
Way before that.
This movie's difficult to talk about because there's so much that you would just have to see it to understand what we're talking about. And not many people have seen this movie, I presume.
No. I wrangled a very difficult to find copy of this. And it seems to be ripped from a VHS. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's difficult because there's so many things that you're like, oh, and then this happened, and then this crazy thing happened, and oh my god, this person was like doing this, and it was just so nuts, and then, you know, but it's hard to relay really like the feelings that you have about it because it's just so crazy and you can't really describe it.
Yeah.
Very visual.
So what do you...
I mean, obviously it's visual.
Well, it has to be if it doesn't have any dialogue.
Right.
Well, what's interesting about this too, the director's choice to put literally from the script, the text on the screen that says interior day, exterior night, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting choice to do as well. And that happens sporadically throughout the film.
That leads me to ask, is that the entire script that Ed Wood wrote? Is it just
those moments?
Camera directions? Yeah, is it just that?
Yeah, it was a pretty like skeletal. I mean, it had, as I understand it, it wasn't really like a very detailed script. It was basically just sketches of scenes.
Huh.
And there was no dialogue in the script either, so.
Right.
It's not like they chose to omit anything. He didn't write any dialogue.
So it starts with Billy Zane killing a nurse and donning her clothes. Now, when you read the synopsis, it says a cross-dresser escapes and so on. I find that to be misleading.
Yeah, that's projecting a bit.
That's the whole, Ed Wood was a cross-dresser, so there's a scene in there, so that must be some sort of fetishized thing that he has. But it's just totally like an escape method.
Yeah, it doesn't, it's barely anything at all, like, you know.
It's kind of cartoony, actually. something that might happen on Scooby-Doo.
Quick, kill a nurse and put on her clothes. Zoink, Scoob!
It was utilitarian drag. He did it because he needed to do it to achieve a specific end. But, you know, Andrew is correct. Like, if you read plot synopses of this movie, it makes it sound like he's in drag for the whole movie, and it's really only a scene.
Right, okay.
Now, but like what is interesting...
Like, it's not a qualifier, is that the word that I'm looking for?
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't make him a crossdresser. If Nuns on the Run is, what, Eric Idle and Robbie, they're two dudes who, they're on the lam, and then they hide out as nuns in a nunnery. They're not in drag because it's a kink or a fetish or a preference of theirs. It's utility. And therein lies the humor for them. So that's how this starts. And I find that because it's Ed Wood, whoever wrote the synopsis is doing so, implying that this is another one of his fetish things. Mm-hmm. Just because he has that legacy.
Well, it was something that he wrote into so many of his films, and especially at his novels and short stories.
He wrote novels?
Wait, did you not know?
No, I don't know anything about Ed Wood.
Oh my god.
I really don't.
Okay, so Ed Wood was an extremely prolific writer.
Okay.
In fact, that wound up being his primary source of income for many, many years because he could not really get a movie off the ground. He wrote, like, thousands of novels and short stories.
Wow.
And all, like, pulp fiction and horror and mystery, and he wrote a whole lot of, like, smut, like, gay and straight and everything in between, and he wrote a lot more than he directed or wrote for film.
I don't know if I ever knew that he wrote novels.
Oh, yeah. Probably his best-known novel is, it's called Killer in Drag, which is it's about a hitman who is a crossdresser, and he kind of like, he shacks up with a sugar daddy who is murdered, and he is framed for the murder, and he goes on the run, and then another crossdressing hitman is assigned to kill him.
He
buys a carnival and hides out at the carnival.
There are two cross-dressing hitmen?
Yes.
What are the odds?
Oh, in an Ed Wood novel, the odds are very great.
The second, he buys a carnival?
He buys a carnival. Yeah, carnivals are another sort of odd fixation, like, of Ed's that he would put into all of his stories. And
he doesn't buy a ticket to a carnival, but he buys a carnival.
No, he buys an entire carnival and then hides out there and, like, falls in love with a hooker.
So he basically does, like, he pulls a Joker or something and buys up.
Yeah, like in The Killing Joke.
Yeah. What?
By the way, the character, the protagonist in Killer in Drag is named Glenn, and his female persona is Glenda. Like in the movie Glenda. A lot of people like to speculate that it's that character, that he, like, ditched his wife. It didn't work out.
He became a hitman?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry to get things sidetracked, but yeah, he was a very prolific writer, and I actually like his writing almost a little more than a lot of his movies.
Well, I mean, you might be able to do more, especially on the page. It engages your imagination, you know?
Totally, and he didn't have to worry about budget restrictions.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, what kind of writer is he? Like, how would you describe his style?
Well, I mean, it's very idiosyncratic, like his films. I mean, a lot of the same quirks from his movies carry over into his writing, you know, very hyperbolic, odd, and stilted, unnatural dialogue.
Hmm.
I mean, and a lot of his fixations are present too, like, you know, cross-dressing and alcohol and carnivals and the occult. The occult is an occult theme to a lot of his short stories.
So here he has, let's pick up the themes. He has the momentary cross-dressing, which is utilitarian, so it doesn't necessarily ring true. So then, do you have alcohol?
Yeah, you have alcohol. You have a cemetery.
You do have a cemetery, and in the cemetery we find the cult. Yes, I believe that they're a cult. And also the groundskeeper, who is part of them, is Ron Perlman, and his quarters are also in the cemetery, but it's a little pyramid.
He lives like in a mausoleum or something, yeah. Sort of.
It's very strange. It's got cots in it, and it's got like some bookshelves here and there, but it's a very strange idea to have just this weird mausoleum that's a little pyramid, and that be your place to stay if you're a groundskeeper. That's just totally strange to me.
I mean, I'm sure it seemed totally natural in Ed Wood's brain. Yeah. Like, yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah, he lives there.
Yeah.
I can totally just picture him hunched over his typewriter, like, banging this out.
Stephen J. Cannell style.
Yeah.
The cult, there's hookers, or a call girl or something like that. Christina Ricci plays her. She tries to seduce him, and this is Christina Ricci at the moment where she's trying to become a young woman in Hollywood as opposed to a little girl, and she has formed into a voluptuous young lady, but she moves like she's still a girl, like her little dance to try to warm him up, whatever. And he's just looking at her.
Yeah, a little unsettling.
He's just looking at her like, like basically, what? And her little dance, I'm like, just looking at her, I'm like, she doesn't have a lot of confidence in her moves. It just doesn't look like she knows what she's doing. I mean, that's fine because of her age. I think she's like late teens, and that's good that she didn't.
It also makes me wonder, like, what the director was telling her.
Yeah, right. This is Buffalo 66. I don't know when that came out. What is that? That was like 99, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, so I found that to be interesting. And then there's the carnival.
There is. Yeah, this has all the wood beats.
Yeah. And of course, you have Myla Nurmi in part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lead into the Christina Ricci part. But Tippi Hedren's part, she's one of the mourners, and he hunts her down, and she's at a lighthouse. Mm-hmm. And he kills her. She falls from a great height onto a beach below, and then you have a concerned young man, citizen, Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I want to know how everybody got involved in this.
Yeah, I've wondered about that too. I mean, I kind of feel like it was just like this fun diversion for a lot of these people. Like, they just like the novelty mm-hmm. of being in this movie that's based on a lost Ed Wood script and,
mm-hmm.
you know, just for the experience and for the hell of it to say that they did it. I don't know. That was my impression.
Right. And they just like shoot for a day and they're done.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Even less than a day. I mean, Jonathan Taylor Thomas was on a beach. His scene was on a beach. There were like maybe 4, maybe 5 camera setups. That's like lunch and he's done, you know? I don't know. It's totally strange. The cast. There are people who we know, we just know them in these tiniest little roles. Mm-hmm. Like Eartha Kitt is just a singer. Kubiak, I call him Kubiak. He's a big guy. I forget his name as an actor because I always know him as Kubiak from Parker Lewis Can't Lose. He plays the bouncer of that nightclub where Eartha Kitt is singing.
Yeah.
Also,
I mean, and there are also a couple Ed Wood regulars, obviously. Myla Nurmi, Vampira. And Conrad Brooks is in the movie, too. I think he plays one of the cops, as usual.
Right. Oh, another. Taylor Negron. Taylor Negron, whose cop movements, as he's chasing after Billy Zane robs the place and shoots a guy. Also, he wasn't gonna shoot the guy. The guy shot at him, and then he was just like, hey, shoot. And then he kills the guy. He leaves, and Taylor Negron comes along, and I was just noticing this, that Taylor Negron's moves are almost like tango. Like he's doing a tango with an invisible partner. Almost. And then the rest of it was just like a Broadway dance in the alleyway. It's very strange. And Taylor Negron's sequence is like 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds long.
You mentioned, Adriana, earlier that you're like, I wonder what the director was telling Christina Ricci during her scene.
Yeah.
But really, what was the director telling every single person in this movie? Like, yeah. Like, was he telling them just do whatever you want? Or like, what kind of vision did this person have? And I don't even know, who is the director of this movie?
Aris Iliopoulos.
Oh, okay.
It's the only thing he's ever directed, right?
Maybe.
I believe so. I definitely don't recognize his name from anything else.
yeah, this is the only thing he's ever directed, and he did one acting job in a movie called Manhattan Gigolo.
Sounds familiar, actually.
You've seen Manhattan Gigolo?
No, but it sounds like it's not the movie by
John Turturro?
Yes. It's not that movie, is it?
No, I don't think so.
Because he has a gigolo movie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not crazy.
I don't remember the name of it either, but yeah, it's not that movie.
Yeah. Just say it sounds familiar. Doesn't mean I will go around watching gigolo movies. I don't. I mean, they're not in my interest.
I don't know. I'm not ever home at the same time
as I would like to watch a movie called Space Gigolo. Maybe.
Okay.
That's where my interest would lie, because it's a space and he would be like a cosmic gigolo and get into all sorts of misadventures. But then it also sounds like it's a Jim Wynorski horrible sex movie, Skinamax movie. I don't know if you know Jim Wynorski. There's another director who makes the worst movies ever.
Oh, what's some of the stuff he's done? I don't recognize him by name.
Ghost in a Teeny Weeny Bikini. I don't know. I don't know. I can't even remember any of his movies because they're so bad.
But yeah, I would really love to know, what is this vision? What is this direction? Wait, like, why? I need to know why.
I actually really like this movie. As bizarre and strange as it is, I like how idiosyncratic it is. How almost without reason it is, but everything still seems to gel. It's ultimately a diversion, I think. I don't think it has too much purpose other than, like, I don't know what Edward's point was.
Yeah.
It doesn't have purpose. Wasting time, but as they threw the music into the movie, it's very eclectic and very cool, I think.
Ugh!
I think the music's fine.
You know, last time we talked about this movie,
I said that
I didn't like it, but I realized that's not really true. The only thing that I don't really like is the music.
Oh, what's the music that you don't like in it? Because, I mean, there's some old standards. There's Nat King Cole, Nature Boy. There's some mid-century space age bachelor pad music, which in 98, we were coming off of the swing stuff. And swing stuff also coinciding with the whole swingers era.
Yeah, there was that weird swing revival.
Yeah, there was, coming off of that swing revival was the space age bachelor pad stuff as well, the lounge music. They were concentric, right? They were overlapping a little bit at the same time.
Yeah.
So some of the swing people were into the bachelor pad stuff. I wasn't much into the swing, but I really liked the bachelor pad stuff. So I appreciate that about this movie. But what was the stuff that you didn't like?
Well, for me, it wasn't just like any one piece of music. Like, I found the majority of like the music in this film to be like this bizarre schizophrenic mess of like 90s schlock. Like, it is very much of its time.
Like drum and bass stuff?
Yeah, like like you have these rapid shifts from like electro clash to like funky big brass to like jungle drum and bass. It was just like, it wasn't coherent at all. Like it took me out of the movie so much. And
really,
I mean, I could be generous and speculate that like maybe it was deliberately aiming for like this cheesy muzak for effect, like as an homage to the kind of bad music you would hear in genre pictures of yesteryear, but like modernized. But it just didn't work for me. Like, and the other thing is, like, unlike a lot of the weirdly incongruous music in many older genre films, like, I totally lacked charm as well. Like, I didn't think it served the movie in any way, functionally or otherwise.
See, I really enjoyed it, actually, because since there's no dialogue, I start to kind of drift away. If I'm too visually stimulated with something, I start to gloss over. Like, even if it's exciting or whatever, I just, like, I gloss over and I can't. I just can't. Like, but if there is dialogue, that brings me back. So the music, to me, like, the dramatic shifts and everything, and I actually really enjoyed most of what was chosen to be in the movie, but the dramatic shifts and everything, it kind of served a purpose to me to like bring me back to the movie. So I had the completely opposite experience than you. Like, it kept me interested.
Wow, it takes all kinds.
I muted the TV.
Oh gosh.
Wow.
So you might have actually missed some of the good stuff.
Hey, yeah, maybe. I checked out kind of early.
Wow, okay. Wow. Gosh, but knowing that it's a,
I mean, I did watch the Eartha Kitt sequence.
Right. The song that opens and closes the film is by Darcy Clay. I don't know who Darcy Clay is, but it's Jesus, I Was Evil. And at first, I was really annoyed with it, but halfway through it, I'm like, this is cool. What? What's the big deal? What's wrong with it? Is it just the beginning where it's just like a power tool noisy? That's probably it, because I'm an old man now, but I eventually came around to that song, and it's kind of a funny song. He's singing about him being evil, but not really doing that many evil things, but he's still claiming to be evil. The lyrical content, in a nutshell. So, Billy Zane's character, it sounds like it might be maybe prefacing him, but all he does is steal something, and he's a little bit crazy. Oh, he has hearing problems. He keeps on freaking out because a sharp noise or something sets him off.
Yeah.
I wonder what that's about. I mean, I figured it out. There's old...
Oh, with like the tuning fork?
Yeah, there's old clips and stuff. B-roll. They did some cool Ed Wood things here where they take old B-roll.
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely trying to emulate some of the classic Ed Wood tech. I think they might have only used first takes.
Oh, wow. If they only used... Well, whatever. If they did that, then that's amazing. Because Billy Zane doing all of that. Yeah. His physical acting in this is amazing. Just straight up bonkers. And to do that only in one take, that would be insane.
Mm-hmm.
Insanely good, I mean. Mm-hmm. But they use educational films. They use stock footage, B-roll from various eras. And one of those was about a kid getting hit in the ear with a baseball. So that seems to be implying that that was him as a kid. Before that, that was that one of those moments where he freaks out. But before that, it's just this educational thing about sound and ears. And it has the voiceover for that. I really have a thing for old 50s educational films. I don't watch them that often, but I really appreciate them. I like a lot of the voice work. I mean, if you guys have heard the... You guys all have, I'm talking to the audience, heard my podcast, all three of you. You'll know that I like messing around with my voice. So, and it stems a lot from that announcer guy or voiceover guy from the 50s through the 70s, whatever. It's a very influential moment in my life. Because I was born in the 50s, you know.
No. What?
No.
That's news to me,
no,
sir.
No. 70s. But I discovered this stuff when I was 14 or 15. All this B-movie stuff or that kind of...
chipper tone when you read something and you sound like this.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of chipper presentation. In my formative years, I gravitated towards that, had fun with it. And that's actually how my art name came about.
Gimetzko. G-I-M-E-T-Z-Z-O. Gimetzko.
It doesn't mean anything. I made it up, but that's how it's supposed to be said.
How did you get the name Gimetzko anyway?
Well, I'll tell you. Me and my friend Marty were messing around with tape recordings, and we were ad-libbing stuff. And previous in the year, we would also draw these fake billboards just on a piece of paper and draw a little cartoon of a billboard and write whatever fake slogan for some cheesy product. And I wrote Gimetzko with the G-I-M-E-T-Z-C-O. And I never said it. I just wrote it as in like Gimetz Company, Gimetzko, right? I don't know what that meant, but it was like next to some sort of like spray on meat only from Gimetzko. So we're doing this, speet. We're doing this recording for a product called Family. It's like Soylent Green or like you're eating a family, you know, but anyway, it was like.
With four new flavors, raspberry, blueberry, strawberry, and banana, only from Gimetzko.
And that's how I did it. And then in 98, I got my first .com, and it was gimetzko.com, because I think that's something people are going to understand to type in. And well, how do you spell it? Oh, that's easy. I was wrong.
Forever
Gimetzko. But I'm stuck. Yep. That's what Gimetzko is. So, and then people would pick that up and go, hey, Jimmy. People used to think that my name was Jimmy because other people would just casually call me Jimmy, but it would be because of Gimetzko. Jim, James. Your name's James? No. Jimmy? Jim? No. Gimetzko, don't worry about it. Just look at me. If you go to the right, whatever. Sorry.
Okay, Andy.
No, that's even worse. I don't mind the hassle. At least it's a conversation. Andy has no conversation.
Or what about Drew?
No, Drew is not me either. Drew is the guy that gets good grades.
It's bro-y.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. It's exactly kind of what I didn't want to go there, but yes, it's bro-y. Any Andy is like a twerp who hangs out with the bully, isn't big enough to be the bully, but is the guy that laughs on the bully. That's an Andy.
But what about Deputy Andy?
No, that's a TV show and false. I'm talking about my experiences.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so do you guys know about Ed Wood's involvement in The Baron of Arizona?
What? No.
No. Wait, for a Vincent Price movie.
Well, in 1950, Wood was working nights at Universal Studios as a production assistant in some capacity. And I think he somehow got involved that way. But he had experience riding horseback. So he wound up doing stunt work in the film In Drag.
What?
As Ellen Drew's double.
Wow.
Towards the end of the film, she falls off a horse and the she is Ed.
Wow, gosh.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's cool. Anything else? Any more, Edward?
Did Edward have any pets?
Yeah, he had two dogs. One was named McGinty, and I don't remember the name of the other one.
See, LB, you got to write these down, because if we ever get a dog, we're just going to name him after Edward's dogs.
McGinty. Okay.
They were, I think, terriers or like little yappy dogs.
Well, forget that. That's not a real dog. Those are rodents.
Oh, those aren't real dogs. I'm kidding. All dogs are dogs.
I don't like little yapper dogs. I don't know who does, but they do.
A lot of people do. McGinty. That's a strange name for an animal.
It's a It's a last name.
Yeah, I'm not too big on when people give dogs human names.
I think it's okay if it's like something really, I don't know, Fred, Frank. I think the F names are actually pretty good. Names. Floyd. Hey, come here, Floyd. Come
well,
here, Frank.
If it's
come
something
here, Fred.
That you don't hear very often, I mean, like...
But like misters.
My grandparents had a bloodhound named Sherman.
But that's named after a cartoon character. No.
Oh,
no.
Was it? I just realized that. Oh, my God.
Nah.
Maybe it wasn't.
If it wasn't, that's fine, but it most likely was. But, like, Mr. Squigglebottoms, I can't stand those things. I can't stand them. I know it sounds funny to say, but you're not 5 years old or 6 years old. Come up with a name, an actual name.
I would probably name my dog something like Bowie or Capote.
Of course you would.
Of course. Of course you would.
Bowie. Hey, you know what? Okay, we found a dog that we named Ziggy, right? Because it had
yeah, we did
it
because
Bowie
it
eyes.
Had the switched eyes.
But then we found out it belonged to somebody,
and so we couldn't.
And its real name was like Daisy May or something.
Yeah, it was. But your mom called our beloved Rocket Bowie because she's calling him boy. Rocket's a good Bowie. Yeah, I would always be like, that's like David Bowie, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's just how Southern people say boy.
Bowie. So now you said once that you did not like this film, and now you just realize that you kind of like it, but it's the soundtrack that you heard initially that puts you off. So officially, what is your consensus now?
Oh, so I was a little flippant earlier. I just want to say that, you know, I think the movie is a very loving tribute to Ed Wood's work.
Elby, what do you think?
I like it. I think it is unlike any other thing I've ever seen. And if I had seen this in, what, like 98 or whenever it came out, I would have probably just, I don't know, creamed my pants or something. Sorry to be rude. But it would have like just blown me away, I think, of just the coolness of it. And you know, I mean, it's always cool when there's like some crazy cameo, you know, where you're like, oh, that person's in it. You know, it's like just really cool.
But the entire film is cameos.
This whole movie is cameos, and it's fun, and I really like it. I don't know if I ever want to watch it again, but it's, I think, a good movie to put on at a party.
Hey, you're saying the stuff I want to say now.
Oh, I appreciate the ambition of the project and wanting to breathe the new life into an old Ed Wood project, but ultimately I don't think it quite achieves the distinction of feeling like an Ed Wood film.
No, I don't think it does either, if you're familiar with Glenn or Glenda, the big three, right? Glenn or Glenda, Bride of the Atom, or Monster, or Plan 9 from Outer Space. Doesn't feel like any of those. No blocking. Those movies aren't kinetic at all. I can't imagine how he would have done this movie if he shot it. Because what we're given is we're given this, I don't know, for lack of a better term, a kind of MTV treatment.
Wood actually had an entire cast planned out for this movie were it to come to fruition.
Wow. Do you know more about that?
The lead actor that he wanted was Aldo Ray, and he also had John Carradine in mind. And who else? David Ward and John Agar.
Oh. Hmm.
But obviously that didn't happen.
Wow.
Yeah, he wanted Carradine as the gravedigger.
A feeble old man?
Yes.
Now, I find this film to be rather fantastic. I like the kinetic nature of it, and of course Billy Zane's performance, but I do think that it's a party movie. You can just leave it on. You can put some other music on. It doesn't matter, but just leave that on visually. You can leave it on a loop. People would be like, what are we watching? What is this? Why isn't the volume on? And you go, it doesn't need it. Just watch. Or you could just leave the music on, because some of it is actually pretty good. Trust us. Yeah. I mean, trust us. Obey. So I like it. I recommend it. Elby likes it. She recommends it. Adriana, do you recommend it?
Yeah, you gotta see it at least once.
At least once, right? With some concessions you suggested. Okay. So thank you very much for being on the show. This is the end of your time here. Get out. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Jeez.
I'm joking.
She's in Pennsylvania.
Come on. I know. Which is where Dracula lives. Thank you for being here, everybody. And thank you for listening to the show. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Anyway.